Welcome to the latest episode of the People Will Talk podcast. Joining me in studio is Maria.
Hello.
And special guest, Amy Jo Doherty. How's it going?
Oh, hello. Hola a todos. Very good. I mean, it's nearly spring. I'm not complaining.
It is. Certainly, it's a fine, beautiful day in Madrid today. And Amy, speaking of Madrid, this is a question. It's a classic question in the podcast now when we interview people, especially when they're not from Madrid. We have to ask it, why did you come here? What brought you to the Spanish capital?
Oh, well, it's a very good question. In them days, I was a teacher, an infants teacher. And really, I became a teacher to travel. So my dream was always to live in Mexico. I'd lived in El Salvador a year and I'd taught a lot in Asia. And there was a job here. It was just for 6 months covering someone's maternity leave because I definitely didn't want to live in Europe. And I thought, well, it came with a Spanish course and they help you to find somewhere to live, obviously. So I thought, great, I'll go 6 months in Spain, in Madrid. I'll brush up my Spanish and then I'll go to Mexico. And that was 19 years ago. It's the longest 6 months of my life.
Quite an English-speaking community, I would say, here in Madrid. So, you know, you do quite a few projects and you're involved with some of these people. So do you think there's like a dynamic community? Do you think it gets up to interesting things here?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I find, especially when I have worked as a teacher in other places, and the expat community has been very much related to teachers or people that I've met through the school. And I found it a little bit more, I don't know the right word. I don't want to offend people, but in Madrid, it's so varied. There's all kinds of people doing all kinds of things. And actually, most foreigners, I think, have got the same story as me, that some of them came for a weekend and have been here and now married with kids. And there's something very captivating about Madrid. And I think it's because many people are not from here in a way that London is. So we're all part of, you know, we're all foreigners in a way. I've got a song actually called Giddy, and I say Madrid, we're all giddies. Because we're all foreigners, really, depending on where you are. And I found that Madrid was very, very welcoming. And I know so many expats from everywhere, really, who are here as teachers, as musicians, as artists, as writers, as some people that are more political. And I found my life has changed so much here. I'm not a teacher anymore. I'm trying to live through music. And I found that Madrid was an easy place to do this, to like follow your dreams in a way.
You mentioned the song Geary. By any chance, was there an Irish guy in the video of that?
I haven't got a video for this song yet, but I know there is one about a giddy, isn't there? A really tall guy.
There, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Someone showed me that.
Yeah, I was going to say, oh, well, I've actually seen you perform then, but it was in another band many years ago. You know, as I said, I've been here for 10 years, so stuff I've done like in the first 2 years in Madrid are a haze now. But speaking of music, I've been listening to your stuff online. I really like what you're doing. For those who are interested, you're Amy Jo Doe and the Spangles. I love that name as well, the Spangles.
Yeah, well, the Spangles also comes from the Spanglishness. And also the idea, well, Spangles, if you look it up in the dictionary, actually means lentejuelas in Spanish, which we don't really call them spangles. We call them sequins. Mm-hmm. Also, I love to wear sparkly stuff. So there's a few different meanings of the word. But yeah, it's kind of punky rock. And then the stuff I do on my own is more the tongue-in-cheek kind of songs like Giri. And maybe if there's time, I'll play you Giri if you like.
That'd be fantastic. We'd love that, yeah. And I guess that the both of them kind of correspond, no? Because punk is kind of tongue-in-cheek as well, I would say. Or maybe that's wrong. What do you think that punk is kind of like?
Well, I suppose like any form of art, you know, quite often there can be a serious message. I suppose that a lot of the genuine old hardcore punks would say it's not a joke at all. You know, it's very serious, anarchic kind of statements. But yeah, I mean, it's the way I am, really. I think the difference between what I do and what we do with the Spangles is that I'm not really a guitar player. So I bang out a few chords and I call it urban poetry more than anything else.
Oh, interesting. And, you know, you mentioned also in your previous answer that there is like such a varied group of people in Madrid, and that's very true. And I'm kind of curious if there's a music scene, there's a live music scene here. Does it exist here like it would in London or in Dublin, for example?
Definitely not in Dublin. There's no comparison. I mean, it's marvelous in Ireland that you go and there's live music, you know, on every corner, in every bar, at different times of the day. And the beautiful thing is that it's appreciated and people go along to listen and, you know, appreciated in the sense that they're also paid by the bar owners, you know. Here, I feel like in Madrid, it's become a bit of a nuisance, live music. And, you know, the neighbours are always complaining. You're now not even allowed to play on the streets. I mean, you know, you remember the days of the Rastro when there was a busker on every corner. People trying to share their art and drum up interest for upcoming gigs, but also people trying to make a living, which is very important. And now it's illegal. They take off you take your instruments off you. I think they don't even give out licenses anymore, which before they did. But yeah, it's hard. It's not appreciated. There's still places around. I live in Lavapiés, and there's still some great bars like the Bodega de Águila. It's like the temple of live music, I would say, in La Latina. There's the Morta Que Parla that have jams, and there's certain owners who are musicians or music lovers that are trying to, you know, work between the neighbours and still trying to put things on. But a lot of it is, yeah, dying a death. It's quite sad.
It's very true, actually, because I remember, like, again, when I first came, I did a little video about buskers in the Madrid Metro, and it was a very wide tapestry of people, you know, ages and nationalities. And you wouldn't really see buskers on the Metro or inside the Metro stations so much anymore. And I remember actually once in the Retiro, I saw a guy setting up like a busker, you know, like for ages, all of his different instruments. And then the police, once everything was set up, the police came over and told him to sling his hook, basically. So I think they were waiting especially just for him to finish so they could kind of like screw him over a little bit. Yeah, but I think because like as you mentioned before we started recording, like I am a teacher as well, but myself and Maria, we do writing as well, and we have book launches and events and things like that. But even we've noticed a shift that like even last year, 2 years ago, it was very easy just walk into a place and go, hey, can we do this event here? And they go, sure. And now it's a bit more resistant. So I think across the board, there's a resistance there to kind of live events for whatever reason, you know, it's just strange.
It's a strange reason because, well, I feel like, you know, talking to you, you're both obviously artistic. And when I say dying a death, that's definitely not true because there's such a rich scene here, like an underground scene and people that are talented and doing stuff. But it's more and more difficult to find places to do it or to make any money out of it. Because I think one of the big problems, which is a real tragedy, is the neighbours in Madrid. People are always complaining. And, you know, the police, I know I've seen police come up and there's a couple of bars I know and the owners have tried to do gigs. And the police say, listen, if they call us, we have to turn up. And half the time, we haven't even started the concert, you know? They see someone walk in a bar with a guitar and they're like, and you think, well, Joe, don't live in a capital city, you know? We're not talking about midnight. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the Mercado de Motores.
Oh, mm-hmm. Delicias, right? Yeah.
Yeah, which is a monthly market. It was, well, it was, I've played there a lot with a punk project that I've got. We just do covers. That's called Amy Jodo and the Stinkers. they've just closed, well, they haven't closed the market, but what they've done is basically closed down the fun. Like my friend organized the bands and DJ'd there, DJ Moderno, and now they're not allowed, basically. It's all kind of very quiet music, bands without amplification. I think they're having a lot of flamenco now, but before it used to be you'd have a concert at 1 p.m. in the afternoon, and then you'd have the bigger concert later on. There'd be a DJ inside, a DJ outside, groups inside, groups outside. And it was just like a cultural hub. And now a friend of mine went last month and she said, now it's just a market. It's really boring.
What a pity. Yeah.
Crazy. It's kind of weird because there aren't many neighbors around. Like, you know, it's for the listeners. Really, it's a standalone building, kind of like some industrial, warehouses.
Yeah, there's a few flats around, but you think, listen, it's once a month. It's 10 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night. There's a lot of miserable bastards.
No, people enjoy live music, I think, very much in Spain. It's like, well, I don't know. We're not gonna get into the politics of the whole thing, but I would say there's more and more kind of like paid big events, corporation type things, and less of spontaneous creative stuff. But anyway, I digress. actually, going back to you before we get into trouble. Obviously nowadays you know music is big part of your life, but was it always the case, you know, when you were growing up, were you very music oriented, like at home and so on?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, my parents aren't musicians, but my dad had an enormous vinyl collection and he was really into rock and roll, and my mum also had her set of records that I think I've stolen a lot of them. She was really into Motown and my dad was really into rock and roll and the Moody Blues, and so there was always music on, and me and my brother loved messing around. We had an old organ, we were always writing songs. I think we were the typical kids that, you know, we loved just messing about on the piano and making up songs. But when we had a piano teacher in some places where we lived, and it was just like, it just killed the fun. Row the boat ashore, here we go again. And then the teacher goes and we're like, woohoo, let's, you know, which I think happens with a lot of children. But I never, ever imagined that I would be a musician. I when I became a teacher, I traveled around with my guitar and I always wrote poems, and the few chords I started to learn, turned them into songs of sort. But I never, ever thought that I would play my songs in public. For me, it was not even a dream come true, because I didn't even imagine it. I was so shy. And just that my songs were for me, really, you know. And then thanks to living in Madrid and the people I met, I think the universe carries you to where you're supposed to be eventually.
You've obviously traveled quite extensively, and even the name of one of your bands is kind of bilingual, has that Spanish English thing going on as well. So like when you are playing with Spanish musicians, for example, or even maybe musicians from other countries, like what's that like creatively? Is there like this energy from these different people from different backgrounds coming together really nicely, or it's like playing with somebody back home? What's it like for you?
Well, like I say, I mean, my musical journey started here, really. In fact, the first guy I had a band with, we are the Ezra Beats, and he's Scottish. I I've learned this from traveling. People are people, and creative people can be difficult. There can be a lot of ego, especially in a band where someone hears a song clearly in their head and wants the drummer to do that. And at first, because I was quite shy and, I used to just let people play what they wanted, and was very all. I found it hard to say, "Oh, I don't like that." But now I understand that, you know, when you're in a band, it's the beautiful thing about being in a band and writing songs together that, you know, you got to try things and not be. For me, the biggest tests were the rehearsals. I used to feel more scared in the rehearsals than actually getting on stage, because I was thinking, oh God, these people are musicians and I'm not really. But yeah, people are people, you know. And I suppose because of the type of music it is, I mean, I'd love to do some collaborations with some flamenco purists, but most of the people that I work with are real rock and rollers, and they love punk and they love that kind of scene, you know.
I guess people don't really expect it, but I've even heard Conan O'Brien, for example, who's beloved, he seems like a very nice guy, but he has spoken about, like, in the writer's room, people kind of butt heads, and in creative fields, like from writing to music, I'm sure the ordinary Joe Soap on the street doesn't really realize it, but actually behind the scenes there's a lot of creative forces maybe knocking off each other sometimes, and that creates the good art ultimately, you know.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, especially in a band. I know there are a lot of artists. Like, I think Michael Jackson used to write all the instrument lines himself, you know, and then get people to play probably not all of it, but get people to play what he, and I think people like Stevie Wonder and Prince did play it all themselves in the recording studio, and then find people to do it for them. But, you know, one, I'm not that talented, and two, it's great to come up with a song. Like, we're doing it at the moment because we're about to record our second album with the Spangles. And I come along with a song, basic lyrics, the chords, the kind of idea in my head. And then we get into the studio and it, you know, it's wonderful to see how a song just goes from something very basic to a whole different, a whole world, really. And everyone's putting their own imprint on it, you know. It's kind of special. But yeah, sometimes it can be like you're hammering it out. You know, you're at loggerheads and they're, oh, let's just try this, or then you will go away and listen to it and someone gets another idea. And it can be a very long process. And, you know, a lot of people don't survive the process because they end up falling out.
Yeah, I think Sigur. Oh, sorry, Maria. I was going to say Sigur Rós, they stay in the studio. They come in and start thinking around with their own ideas. And it, like, almost intuitively comes together as a song in the same session, you know. So it's quite interesting as well. But yes, Maria, sorry, you're going to ask a question there.
No, well, I was actually going to say, first of all, like the creative process, as you were saying before, you know, we're all creative people, and it's similar, maybe, in writing, isn't it? Like, you start with maybe just a few ideas, and then part of the really nice thing is to leave that process of how those ideas turn into a proper story or a proper book. So
yeah,
like you said, that's, well, people are people, so it's something shared across different creative endeavors, I would say, and different countries. But I don't know if you've noticed, because obviously you say you've traveled to different countries and you've done concerts in different countries. Have you noticed any difference between the crowds, for example, how the crowds respond? I've heard that sometimes, you know, how, well, I don't know, I don't want to condition your answer, but I've heard before that, for example, in Spain, people are quite engaged and quite responsive, maybe in comparison to other places, I don't know.
Well, actually, I was going to say that I think people, you know, it's not a criticism, but I find it quite frustrating that people talk a lot here.
Ah, well, yeah.
it's a real cultural thing, because I even noticed it as a teacher. You know, you're in a staff meeting and people are talking.
Yeah.
And I noticed that's horrible. The kids, you feel like people are always talking. And sometimes I used to look at the kids and think, no one's actually talking. There's just that noise. It's a Spanish thing, I think. No, but in concert, yeah. I mean, I've seen it. Like, it's really embarrassing. And sometimes you have to tell people to shut up because you're sat behind someone. They're talking, especially if it's an acoustic gig. And sometimes I've even seen it, like musicians have turned up their amp and people have started talking louder, and you just think, if you come here to, or even, you know, and sometimes it has made me feel better, because you've been in big concerts, you, where people have paid over €30 for a ticket, and they stood on the dance floor in front of the stage having a conversation. And you think, wow, why, you know, go out. Why have you spent this money to talk the whole way through the concert? But people don't, I think people don't realise. I think, I don't know if it's people are feel embarrassed or self-conscious just to stand and enjoy songs. It's like you always have to make a commentary or, you know, and I find that very frustrating. That would be considered very rude in some other concerts, or I think in some other countries, and people would actually say, you know, stop it, and they'd be pushed out, especially at the front, you know, they'd be pushed out. Whereas here, like, I've been with a friend, she's French, and she told some people to shut up, and she got such a dirty look, you know, it's like, how dare you? We're at a concert, of course we can talk. Like, oh God, it's more accepted, I should say, here.
Yeah, well, I can empathize with you. I have to say, you know, we're not all like that.
No, so of course not.
It's something that, but like, you know, I fully understand you because most people are like that, I would say probably in Spain. And, you know, us in the minority find it excruciating, and this has happened to us many times. And for example, in museums, that's something, you know, in exhibitions, you know, people are just talking and talking away, and well, I always like they shout dirty looks, and
for what it's worth. Yeah, they think you're being rude by telling them
but well, who cares, I do it anyway.
Yeah, no, good for you. Yeah, I think maybe that's the difference. If you've ever been on a stage trying to present something, you know, and you're kind of pouring your heart out over a piece you've written or a song or even a discourse on it, and then people are talking, it's like, hang on a minute.
So, like, speaking of very noisy, annoying talkers and crowds, obviously that leads on to talking about the venues and stuff, and you mentioned that you never really thought that you'd end up doing music as a calling or perhaps even a way of life, but you've ended up on like Radio 3 here in Spain, and you performed in the Independence Club, which is quite famous in Madrid as well. So you've kind of played really like interesting and amazing venues. So were these moments surprising, gratifying? How would you describe them for us?
Oh, incredible. You know, incredible to not only the stage and the sound, when things sound great, but when there's, you know, a big crowd of people. And I think, for example, in those big places, you can't hear if people are talking. You know, so it's like, it's not so, and it's actually a lot less scary than playing a small, like the other day I did a gig in La Vida Tiene Sentidos. I don't know if you know that shop. It's like a Marino's place.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Calle Ave Maria, and they do lots of things. In fact, if you're looking for places to present books, and they do lots of things. They're lovely people. They've got delicious wine and cheese and ham, and you know, it's a great place. But that can be more nerve-wracking because you're right there, you know, right there in the crowd almost yourself. When you're on a big stage, you know, it's beautiful because you've got the camarinos and the sound is impeccable, but in a way you're more distant from the energy of the crowd, so it can be you're more distant in a way. Yeah.
And also, as well as performances, you have you have quite a few projects. One of them is related to, I guess, you bring together you know, music with teaching experience. Maybe it's called Shaky Doodle Time. Can you tell us a little bit more about it? You know, how you think like music can help people learn?
Oh, well, I think music is therapeutic, you know, just innately. I think it's incredible. I do this project with a guy called Fernando, who I met working for a project we did for Cambridge. I mean, I've been very blessed that in the last few years, I've had projects writing kids' songs for editorials. And I love it because it's a bit like doing a puzzle, you know. They say, right, we need a song for this age group containing these words. These are the grammar points. This is the vocabulary. Sometimes they give you a style. It pays very well, which is also the other bonus. And it's just marvelous. I just love it. And then me and Fernando started doing our own for ourselves, making videos and songs. And it's really good fun. In fact, I was out at his village yesterday and we're putting another song together. I love writing. I love writing songs, and I love writing songs for kids. I think a lot of my songs people do say are quite cheesy. So, you know, probably because of the limitation in the chords, I know, and I love a rhyme. If rhyme were a crime, I'd have done time. But yeah, no, I love that. And I actually run a parents and babies group called Shake, Rattle and Roll. And I've been doing that for years as well. And it's like a musical play group. And we do nursery rhymes and, we sing Beatles songs. I pass out instruments. I haven't done it since we're back this year because I've been doing it in Retiro and it's just a bit too cold. But, I do birthday parties and I love being with kids. I did love being a teacher. I just hated the paperwork. And I love the way that with kids, you know, you can get them all together by singing. I mean, infants, teachers, we know that it's all about singing, really, whatever you're trying to teach. And I feel that, you know, that idea when you're in a concert or when you're with the parents too, something goes directly to the kids, the inner children. And, you know, we all love to have a sing and a dance and a, not always, but, you know, there's something in all of us, I would say, deep down in some, but music does something to us, doesn't it? It takes you somewhere. It relieves you. It helps you remember. Very powerful.
Well, one of the first things ever invented was a flute. So a lot of really? Musicologists and yeah, so it's like once we started out as a species, you know, weapons or whatever it is, one of the earliest inventions in human history was kind of flutes. Yeah, so it just kind of goes to show that it is kind of encoded in our DNA to kind of make music and enjoy it in our kind of species as well. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once the beat stops, you know, you've had it basically. Your heartbeat, you know. And I think actually before people started talking as a way of communication, people used to sing and make noises, really? A bit like birds. Yeah, apparently. I'm sure I read that there somewhere.
Apparently, yeah, swear words were also predate actual vocabulary. I haven't investigated that, but as a committed swearer myself, it makes me happy to know that.
That's a load of no, I'm joking. I'm not surprised because I bet people probably needed to communicate needs or emotions, and I'm sure anger and frustration was one of the earliest ones too, right?
and speaking of words, you mentioned you had a song called Geary. Now, for our listeners who aren't familiar what that word means, it refers to us basically. No, you and me, Amy, we're Northern Europeans or people who are not Spanish. And sometimes it's like, oh, you're silly, you don't know what you're doing, basically, in Spain. But it's a collective term for her, for people like us. I don't know if you're up for it to finish us off. Would you be interested in doing a few bars of that? Or
I'd love to, yeah. And it's in Spanglish, so
perfect.
We were with a friend. I was on holiday with a Spanish lady, a French girl, an Italian, and me. And I think there was two Brits. And apparently we were the Giris. The French wasn't considered a Giri. The Italian definitely not. I think you're right. It's more to do with Northern Europe or people that wear socks with sandals, apparently.
Yeah.
So when I sing it, I want people to shout, Giri, 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 don't be silly. He comes from Alemania. He likes the Spanish caña. He lives in Malasaña. He's a Giri in Madrid. Giri, Giri. Giri, giri, y esta chica china lives in La Latina. You probably have seen her, she's a giri in Madrid. Giri, giri, giri. I don't think it's fair though, everyone's an extranjero. We're all from here and there, so we're all giris in Madrid. Giri, giri, giri. Y esta chica sueca, you really gotta check her. Not gay but lives in Chueca, she's a giri in Madrid. Giri, giri, giri. Y esta Filipina lives in Teso de Molina. I am her vecina. We are giris in Madrid. kitty, kitty, kitty. Ma eres una mezcla vital y muy, muy fresca. Y aunque no parezca, we're all kitties in Madrid. Kitty, 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 don't be silly. Y el italiano vive en Serrano, su novio gitano. They are kitties in Madrid. Kitty, 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 dos indias hermosas live in Rías Rosas, eating jamón con samosas. They are kitties in Madrid. Kitty, kitty, kitty. No es nada muy profundo, pero businessman o vagabundo somos hijos del mundo. Yeah, we're all kitties in Madrid. Kitty, kitty, kitty. Madrid, London, Dublin and Rome.
Fantastic. Hey.
Bravo.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was brilliant.
Yeah, that was amazing. Thank you so much, Amy, for playing that. We will put your links in the description of this pod so people can hear your wonderful music. And
oh, yes,
if they happen to, oh, of course. And if they happen to be in the Spanish capital, they might even, you know, pop along and see you in concert, which would be a great experience as well. Thank you so much, Amy, for being here. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much. Oh, well, let me just tell you that I'm doing a concert with another project, a beautiful Irish woman, Yvonne Power. We've got a group called the Pipistrellas, and we're going to be doing a gig on the 8th of March to celebrate the International Day of Women. In a fantastic little bar called the Cafeteria de los Abogados de Atocha, very near in Bajadores. So you're all very welcome. I'd love to see you both there. Come along and we'll have a sing-song.
Fantastic. Chalk it down. We'll be there with bells on. For sure.
All right. Thank you. Bye. Have a great day.